All the Rage with John Bowd on www.tracksfm.org.
Welcome to John Bowd's All the Rage here on a Wednesday. We're going to talk about something different in the main today. We are going to touch on some of the other stuff that we can't avoid, and we have spoke about it for some time now, me and John. But we're going to get back onto pirate radio. Don't worry, John.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Just we should let listeners know at this point that this is a pre-record for Wednesday the 5th of June, because I'm going to be busy that night seeing some of my podcast inspirations and doing a gig at the Islington Assembly Hall, and I might even get an interview with them if I'm playing my cards right. But I'll be seeing them, so we're doing this. So whatever's happened in London in regards to protest to Mr. Trump coming over, and boy, I hope it's going to be a big one, because he didn't seem to get the message last time, then we won't report back on that yet. We'll do that next week, so we can let the dust settle. I was hoping to get some footage of that myself, but unfortunately I can't get the day off work, but that's another story. What I want to talk about just briefly before we go on to talk about something a lot more upbeat and enjoyable, it's to do with British democracy, and it's to do with a lack of comment right now coming from right wingers or any of the mainstream or anyone else, which I find really amazing. It goes a bit like this. So international listeners, British listeners will know what's going on here, but international listeners might not. So if you want to know where we are right now, cock an ear to this and we'll tell you all about it. Britain is not only right now waiting for the Conservative Party alone and its ageing, decrepit and reducing membership to decide who our next Prime Minister is going to be, but we also have US President Donald Trump chiming in, to say who he thinks should be in charge and who shouldn't. So basically, people that he's met and have kissed his ass are the people he thinks should be in charge, most principally Boris Johnson. Whereas Michael Gove, who wasn't very nice to him apparently about something, he thinks you shouldn't have. I think both of them are extreme right-wing lunatics, and I don't want either of them as Prime Minister, but we'll come to that in a minute. As much as it disgusts us all, I've got to say, though, this isn't really a surprise that he would get involved in this. Because one of the things that Conservatives get annoyed with Trump about is that he says, in the words of Chapo, he says the quiet part loud. That is, the kind of racism, which is really Republican Party policy, is a kind of thing he says out loud rather than hiding it behind some rhetoric about reducing crime or benefits, dependence, any of that shit. And including his relations with other countries, such as the UK. I mean, he's basically telling the UK what to do, because America does tell the UK what to do. They always have, at least in our lifetimes, anyway. And that is how no one representing power in this country has condemned Trump or told him to mind his own business, as it were. Mind his own business about who should and shouldn't be Prime Minister of Britain. As if, say, someone like Nicolas Maduro told us who should be appointed Prime Minister of this country. The only person I've found so far in the Twitter sphere within the realms of power, but not in government, to have told him where to go is Jeremy Corbyn, who's, as leader of the Labour Party, has told Mr. Trump that it's not his business to talk about who Britain should and shouldn't be putting in positions of power or negotiation. However, of course, this is Jeremy Corbyn, who isn't British enough for so many of our great countrymen, because he was leading light in bringing peace in Northern Ireland or not getting involved in hideous and pointless wars in other parts of the world. So, yeah, he's that guy. Trumpo has also gone on to say that Nigel Farage should be included in the Brexit negotiation team. That would be Nigel Farage, the crypto-fascist who stokes up hatred amongst the British population for minorities and the most vulnerable, and the same for Farage, who has never actually won an election to the British Parliament, despite running around about seven times now. Never won. Also wears a milkshake quite well. Now, why is the US president saying all this? Well, Farage has been sucking his cock for years now, and basically got forgotten about him after the election, but now he seems to have come back. One of his mates reminded him of it. But that's how it works in the networks, in the power networks that we like to pretend the likes of Farage and Trump are outside of. Well, firstly, when you're a millionaire or a millionaire plus, you are never outside any of the mainstream power networks. You're never outside of any power network, full stop. You are the power network, because the only way you can have obtained that money is by playing that game, one way or another. There are no nice millionaires, okay? Richard Branson is not cuddly. Alan Sugar isn't someone who knows what he's talking about. In fact, he's thick as shit. He doesn't even understand how elections work. He doesn't understand how tax rates work. But, you know, because he's supposedly quite good in business, despite going bankrupt in the past, he's considered to be someone who can tell us all what to do. And Trump is pretty much in the same place, despite the fact that he's clearly around the twist and probably suffering from some form of dementia at this point. But, of course, sucking up to Mr. Trump means that you get lots of love bestowed upon you, because the old bigot is that sort of guy. He doesn't care about consequences. He doesn't even care about reality. He just wants everyone to love him because he's so special. Now, does he really care who leads Britain? Well, in a manner of speaking, I do think there's some power machinations going on probably behind him. And maybe he's aware of this too. But this is more likely to do with getting Britain to crap out of the European Union with no deal and reducing our food protection, so that shitty US stuff such as chlorinated chicken can come in without much trouble, and also so that the NHS can be sold off. And certainly many of the, if not, well, now let's probably be honest about this, probably all of the Tory party candidates running for leadership of the party and therefore running to be Prime Minister right now would do this, not least Boris Johnson, who's a hardcore Brexiteer I don't think he's that hardcore, but certainly he's a hardcore free marketeer. Jeremy Hunt, who, if I remember rightly, actually wrote a book about how to, or co-wrote a book about how to sell off the NHS. Esther McVeigh, who's deeply evil, I don't think all the others will be any different. But then again, I also don't think they're going to win, so they're probably not worth mentioning. But yeah, that's what this is about, folks. It's about reducing our systems so that they can be sold off, such as the NHS, such as food protection. But then again, I've got to come back to the issue of, does this really surprise us and does it really bother us? Because for years it's been taken for granted that Rupert Murdoch, with whose control of the British press, was the one who decided who the next Prime Minister was going to be. And many former Prime Ministers or candidates actively sucked up to him and did his bidding, even in their policy actions. One edition of Newsnight, I don't know, you might remember this, Dave, actually, I do, in I think about 2008 or 2009, actually ran with a headline one night that said that Murdoch had not decided who to back yet for the next election. And they announced this as if this was a story that they announced it without really going into the story of asking questions such as, what the hell are you talking about? Isn't this a democracy? No, apparently this old geezer tells us what we should and shouldn't do as he stews away in his mansion. So, yeah, he was deciding who to back, and the BBC was basically doing their job as a public service broadcaster by announcing to any prospective leaders, parties or contenders that they should, go and grovel to him in order to be able to win government. Quite chilling, really, in my opinion, but most of the rest of us don't seem to mind. Again, this just proves what utter shite patriotic rhetoric is and how totally meaningless it is about the day-to-day lives of real people in this country and how much power and control we have over our own democracy and about our own working life and the things that rule us. But hey, don't forget to remember D-Day this week. That's very important. All through the Brexit negotiations and all through the Euro elections, Labour have actually called for a general election. And many, including the right of that party, have batted it all away and mocked it and spat on it. But can someone actually tell me what the alternative is right now? Because we're having a government and leader picked for us by the present governing party, which I have no doubt would cause so much more headlines and talking head yakking if it was Labour who were doing this, despite the fact that Labour Party actually even has, if you want to talk about democracy and numbers, has more members right now than the Conservative Party has. So it would even be comparatively more democratic. That isn't to say I agree with how this system is done. I don't. The Prime Minister is falling. We need a general election, as far as I'm concerned. And yeah, I did say the same thing under Gordon Brown as well, and I think he you know, blew his chances by not calling it in 2007. But there you are. If we're going to have any power, we not only need to change the government, but change how we get government, because the present system is completely bankrupt. Dave, that's all I particularly wanted to say on that, unless you want to feedback.
No, it's, you know, I just find, as they say, John, you know, a day in politics is a long time, or a day in politics is quickly forgotten. So, yeah. So when the calls for general election 6 months ago got absolutely laughed at the water, I listened to a talk station in the motor, and majority of callers, don't get me wrong, you know, they're over a certain age and they'll only ring in because they're retired and they've got nothing to do, all said, let's have a general election. So you know, 6 months in politics is a long time. People have short memories, but you know, strange times. I would say to kids, if you're 35 and under, enjoy this, or not. You're probably one of the 63% who just didn't vote in the last EU elections, because our school system really doesn't teach us proper history. No. Just teaches about the fire in London, the Industrial Revolution, Vikings, and that's it, really. Doesn't teach you about slavery, British colonisation, poverty. Let's say if we're teaching kids about the fire and Great Fire in London, briefly talks about all houses being made of wood and comparing it to Grenfell, or social housing with dangerous cladding around it. So yeah, if the kid's under 35, if you're bored of this stuff on the telly, don't watch. But I would say that when there is a general election, please, you've got to use your vote. Don't not do it, okay? I spoke to someone, a close friend of the family yesterday, my age, over 50, and he has never voted. That's a bad mistake. You know, that just vote. You're sick of all the crap that's going on the telly at the moment, and these people that speak... they're speaking a different language, they're very posh, they're no relevance to your everyday life. But it does need a general election, and it's not about us over 50s, it's about you under 30s, because when this is all over, this is all yours, you know. So we do need radical change in this country on how things and how few benefit from it and how many don't. Okay, please vote. John, we're going to talk about something else now, right?
We are. Before we do that, I just quickly bit I want to add to the end of that, because in regards to some of our listeners, and certainly me personally, having a good few anarchist comrades, I'm not saying, because I know a lot of those people most of them don't vote, it's part of their belief system, and I'm not dissing your belief system, but I would ask you to please look at a situation within the present system where anything has been improved by not voting. I understand that the goal one day is to have a culture where, you know, we don't have to do that, we have a full and complete participative democracy, and while we might disagree about ways and methods, you have my solidarity, certainly in your ideology for trying to bring that about. But right now, don't vote, especially, I mean, this country being a good example, don't vote. Look what we get. In America, the amount of people that it was, you know, assumed would go and vote for Hillary Clinton because they had voted for Barack Obama, they didn't, and you got Donald Trump. So you can't tell me that not voting improves the system. I'm afraid that's something where I really do disagree. Anyway, enough of bankrupt, pointless culture such as voting. Dave, we're going to talk about something very close to your heart and very close to my romantic notions of the world.
What we'll do, we'll take a music break. Yeah. And when we come back, you crazy kids, we're going to be talking about pirate radio.
John Bowles, Underground Show, on Trax FM. Trax FM. Trax FM.
Yeah, I have no idea why I picked that song, because it's hardly pirate radio. I don't know why I picked... The next one I'm going to play is synonymous with What Tracks FM, or one of the songs we used to play in 85 when we came on air as young Asian kids in an area of London that pretty much, A, didn't have a pirate station, and B, it was very rare for any ethnic minority to sort of push ahead. Certainly at that age, we were 18, 16, 17, 18. And it was an odd thing to do. I don't know why we decided to do it. I just said, let's do it. And it's the most fun time I've had. It's the most revolutionary thing I've ever been involved in. So at that time, most kids, certainly ethnic minorities, it was very rare for them to be DJs, let alone starting a pirate station. And it wasn't any normal pirate station, John. It was we used to do chart rundowns of the soul charts. A lot of record labels used to get in touch with us. We had to organise advertising just to keep us running. So at 16, 17, 18, we were organising. We get taken down every week. Sometimes for silly things, we were in magistrates' courts every week, made to feel like common criminals. You know, it was a great time. It was. I'd do it tomorrow if I was young and had the time. I would do it. You know, you end up on a roof somewhere with a huge aerial. You run the thing. You have to get people to scout to see that DTI don't come and bust you. It's different now because we've got computers now and we use the phone line, so the studio can be far away from the transmitter, one end of London. So they would never find your studio. They can only take your transmitter down, and that's like £200 to £500 a pop. I know Ofcom do, so they're trying some low cost DAB. That's still an awful lot of money, John, to be honest. And they're offering, and the criteria is really tight for community radio, and you've got to put a business case in, you've got to purchase property, you've got to show some sort of business, financial business plan, you've got to show demographics for the music you want to play, you've got to conform to Ofcom's very strict speech output, very strict. And if you're going to do news, you have to pick their news association. So you don't mess about. When you come up to 5 o'clock, you've got to go to 5 o'clock because their feed kicks in, and it's a news agency that LBC and all that use, Capital and stuff like that. I'm just not interested in that, John. It just doesn't interest me.
Me neither, and I'm familiar with that news thing because that happened at a hospital radio that I used to be at, and they started keying into that feed. So every hour you had to fanny about with their a jingle that they had made for that station, and then just push the fader up, and it went straight into the news.
Yeah, and what news? Yeah. I mean, What news? I mean, I listen to that news feed on commercial stations now, and it's pretty, it's biased. So Trax's ethos is to play what you want. So our music DJs play what they want, say what they want. And if you don't like it, then don't listen to us. And a lot of people do like it. If I went to that side, I mean, you look at Ofcom's fines and removal of licenses, community licenses. So, for example, me and you, John, talk about conservatives. So, yeah. Under Ofcom rules, during an election, we'd have to give a certain amount of time to all the main political parties. We'd have to talk about all three or four of them. It goes on and on, John. The constraints you have.
Absolutely, but I'm inclined to think, and okay, right now I'm technically giving an opinion, but I'm going to talk about bias in that part of the media. And okay, to be honest, we could do 8 shows on media bias, but let's just mention it now. I'm not just saying this out of smarminess, I don't think Ofcom are fit for purpose in a lot of ways. One of them being that. So you say that their issues are major parties giving airtime to major parties. So how the fuck does Farage and the likes of UKIP get on Question Time? He never was.
Exactly. So these rules are only in place if there's an election. But it's a little bit like what we spoke about, that there's so much media attention to the far right or its views. You'd think that they were governing the country. Absolutely. Would think that they're the popular choice. And this is what I say to kids. You know, if this station was FM, DAB, it was compulsory in every home, I'd be telling you, please, vote. Get out and vote. Get out and vote. This is not true, and I know you listening to me. These people don't govern the country. They're very dangerous. Go out and vote. And if, you know, if I was a millionaire, I'd be just campaigning. Vote, get out, get the vote out. But I think Labour will campaign very well.
We don't need millionaire campaigners and either likes of you and me, and we're doing it pretty well.
Look, I apologise for that, because I just found out Alistair Campbell was actually a member of these pro-EU think tanks, and they're all millionaires. I do apologise for that.
Dave's apologising for mentioning millionaires in a positive light. I will not have that on my radio show. putting that aside, I mean, firstly, you've got me going, and the idea of us radios being compulsory in every home. Oh, Joe would be proud of me if I did that. I agree with all of that, and I don't want to spend too... I want to talk about the positives of pirate radio. I don't want to spend too much time, but this is... just let me kind of fill you in from where I'm coming from. So I've never done pirate radio in the past. I was a bit too young, but I do have some personal stories of enjoying it a great deal, and the... I'll be honest about it. There's a romance to it, perhaps, in my mind. I'd like to talk to you about, as particularly David, your experiences of the difference between the romance and the actuality. But we'll get to that in a minute. But also, my background is this. I used to do hospital radio, and I did a little bit of community radio in the Harrow area. Now, the benefits of those two examples was that both, I believe, certainly the hospital was a registered charity, which for reasons that are a little bit beyond me, I don't really know why, we meant that we were allowed to play whatever we wanted. Now, my program controller, who was in place at the time and gave me my training to be an engineer, a DJ, whatever you want to call it, he is still a friend of mine to this day. He said to me when I went on, well, okay, as such, these are the rules. Don't play too many songs with lots of swearing in them. But, you know, to be honest, wink, wink, you know, if you play the odd one with the odd naughty word, you'll get away with it. But don't play any songs with too much swearing in. And don't play any songs with too much emphasis on death, because you are broadcasting to a hospital and there are people in this building who are dying. I thought, well, that's fair enough. That's a criteria I'm willing to follow. That particular situation got a whole lot more complicated later on when he wasn't the program controller anymore, and a hideous little nitwit who liked to say, "I am the." His phrase was, "I am the program controller. I control the programs." And my phrase was, "Don't even fucking try it with my program, sunshine." And then they started doing local advertising, and I got very agitated. So, you know, that ended. And then my girlfriend did regular community radio, and I used to sit in for her on occasion or take part in sort of jukebox jury style programs where we would review songs. But again, you know, we could play whatever we wanted, again within those confines. And I've got to say, the bloke who ran the he's not with us anymore, and RIP to Keith, he was a lovely guy, but he was I don't think he was even that bothered if I did play anything with swearing in it. He didn't seem to be too bothered, but anyway, I tried to keep to those rules up to a point. So that's where I was coming from. And other than that, as I say, I'll intersperse in a little while with stories about coming into contact with pirate radio when I was young, when I was a teenager, especially in a preteen. But there's the romance to it. Let's be honest now. Just for listeners, you should understand what I mean by the term romance. I am understanding, of course, that romance is something which is, by its very nature, fantasy and unreal. But as long as you know that, I don't really have that much of a problem with it. I think, you know, if you want to put a romantic tinge on something, where necessary, you know, there are some things you don't put a romantic tinge on, like war and things like that. That's just appalling. I do wonder about this. So I'm thinking here, Dave, there's a part of me that's thinking, wow, you know, listen to these fellas out there and these ladies out there bringing out this radio, bringing out music I've never heard anywhere else, bringing up music that you can't hear anywhere else because commercial radio doesn't do its job properly by playing you a diversity of stuff. It never really did, but especially doesn't now, with the exception of a few shows. But then again, I'm also thinking there's a part of me that thinks you're standing on top of a roof in the pissing rain holding an aerial so you can get a phone call to somebody 2 miles down the road. Give me an idea. What were some of those experiences like? What was great and what was really grim and grinding?
There's, it probably is a lot different now because, but what I'm saying is, so there's so much goes into it. You know, the setup, the antenna, the transmitter, the studio. Sometimes you cannot get a bunch of DJs into a rotor. You've just been busted, so you have to get a rotor going of some sort. And then it's all set up, it's ready to go. You do the tests, and then you hit the on button. That can, that's hit or miss as well on the transmitter, but if you've got a good engineer, it will go on.
Is it like in like Star Wars, when you hit the button and you hear that noise, it goes...
No, because normally it's just... You get two little boxes. You get one little one, which is the exciter. So right. That's like the preamp. And then it goes into a big-ish box, about the size of a laptop, with heat sinks and stuff like that. And it's very homemade. And you just switch it on. It's got a fan. A good transmitter will have a fan. And we try to keep that away from the mic because it picks up the fan noise. And then we check on the transmitter or on someone's car that says, yeah, we're on. And there is nothing like playing a record at that time. It's not being played anywhere. So at that time, we were pushing a lot of soul funk or soul dance or electro or hip hop. And there's nothing like hearing, we're on, it's happening. And at that time, John, because you kept the same frequency, it was always important to keep the same frequency, the listeners would come back. So you'd be off for 48 hours and people would regularly check on their FM dial and then the phone would start going off and then people would be congratulating you that you're back.
Excellent.
And that's the community that we had. And then the area, I mean, we pretty much concentrated on Northwest London because we just didn't have access to Crystal Palace, which was full of pirate radio, but they had the best region, it had the best coverage. But we normally picked high rise blocks in Stonebridge. So we'd have to, in night time, we'd have to go up the towers, get accosted or mugged or attempted to be mugged by the drug dealers, get up to the top, put it up, might run into other pirate radio, but we'd get threatened because they were mainly reggae guys, so they left us alone. And then when you play that record and it's on the radio, geez, it's a feeling I can't begin to explain. And because you're pushing out music that at that time wasn't being played, so you feel that you're contributing to something anyway. And then we would go to an opening of a school disco or something in the local high school, and we would get mobbed. They're asking for your autograph and things like that. It's really surreal. I think the same thing happens now with internet radio, but now we just advertise on Facebook. So, you know, but now you have got stations that play music that they, you know, I think the soul funk thing is not that played a lot, but then people still like it. But then I'm only catering for that age group. I think new music, it's pointless having a pirate station because you just have to put the telly on Capital Extra, Kiss FM, blah 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 blah. Yeah, if every venue or most venues they're playing trap or grime, and it's out there, full exposure. I think it's pointless having pirate for that. But as I said, John, at that time, it's a little bit like your hospital radio thing because I think you guys still had a place for that because it's a again people would say, you know, what a funny thing to do, hospital radio and pirate radio. People don't understand the sacrifices you do just to get it out there, just to broadcast.
Yeah, well, to me, a lot of that comes back to the influence of punk, which would burnt out before I was dead. Before I was alive. Pardon me. Punk was dead before I was alive, is what I meant to say. But the influence of punk has always been more than just about music. It was about do-it-yourself culture. It was about zines and it was about that kind of radio thing. And certainly when I got the chance to go on air in hospital radio, I said, look, the only way I'm doing this is within the confines of the rules that I just pointed out to you earlier. I get to play whatever I want to. because this is about playing music that doesn't get played anywhere else, because that's what I think the job of music, of radio is supposed to be. Because everyone says, oh, you can find anything on the internet. Yeah, you can, but not if you don't know what it is. You can't find it. Okay, one of my, a band I'm a big fan of over the last few years is a Spanish band called Chroma, who are this kind of rock band that I got into and ended up seeing them. Yeah, they got a Bandcamp page and I ended up seeing them on in a little venue around the back of the old Kent Road years back. But, you know, how did I find out about them? Well, I didn't find out about it listening to the commercial radio, you know, and you wouldn't do because they wouldn't play them. So that to me was, it was about, I don't know, it was half a mind, without being grandiose, but I had half a mind that we were creating culture. I mean, did you think that's what you were doing when you were a pirate?
Oh, absolutely, John. It's a surreal thing that you do, and once it's in your blood, it never leaves. So when the opportunity came to start Tracks FM, because we were going in and out of here sort of the late 80s, and the bus were terrible, and then people move on, we get married and start families and stuff like that. But I was always in the music industry up to a point. And when the opportunity came to go on the internet, and I tried my hand on different stations, and certainly a German station, New Funk Radio, very good station. And then I thought, I'm actually going to get us back. And then I'm going to introduce talk shows. That's one something we wanted to do on the old Tracks FM. Mm. And talk about, because what got us into politics for me at that time, I was into politics from 12, but at that time I wanted the Home Secretary to change the rules on pirate radio.
Yeah.
A little bit like France had, which was like, if you can't survive, you'll go under, that's it.
Yeah.
But you know, and we'd spoke about Ofcom. Ofcom then were just in charge of TV and radio. Now Ofcom are in charge of TV, radio, mobile phones, a broadband, satellite, and the postal service.
Yeah,
they're now in they're in charge of everything, and I don't remember electing them. Sure. I don't know who they are. And they say they do have a hand in all those industries I mentioned by accusing the companies that run them of being inefficient. And what they mean is, we don't want you to give people good jobs. So this regulator has taken a life on its own now. So not only did I have something against the Home Secretary at that time, I now have a real problem with the regulator, because I think New Labour gave everything to Ofcom. And in 2010, they just became the governor of everything. And, for example, Ofcom now can say to Royal Mail, and are saying to Royal Mail, you pay your people too well. You give them too much better terms and conditions than Dutch Post in Germany. You're inefficient. And then that company then attacks, or Royal Mail, for example, will attack the work people who work for. So just to get back to that, Ofcom, who do that, are now in charge of the radio. And as I said, it's not worth it. I mean, I think technology now is putting DAB in cars. People are listening to podcasts more than actually live radio. So if you look at catch-up TV now, that's more popular than live TV. Spotify. I think Tracks FM now are now affiliated to, not affiliated, but iTunes Radio. We have a channel now on iTunes Radio. I never asked for it; they just did it. So we're doing something right. So all different mediums, and I'm so pleased, because in that sense, I'm pleased because it takes Ofcom out the equation. And people say, "Well, I don't want to be part of your little clan, your little control freaky thing that says you can't say this and say that." And I've spoken to many people about applying for a DAB license, and a lot of the presenters on Track said no, because they'll just change everything about us. They'll just we'll never have a All the Rage show on an Ofcom regulated radio station, John.
Oh, fuck no, I wouldn't want one.
It will never happen. I mean, you know, we'll just have to talk about anything but what we want to talk about.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And I don't think it's our ethos to do that.
No. It's also one of the reasons why I couldn't even stand to be involved in hospital radio anymore, because they were becoming like that. And even, you know, the community stuff I was never into as much, just because I didn't have the time to give it the kind of care and attention that I want to. So I didn't feel confident that I wanted to put that out with my name on it, basically. Well, but also, that's why I
can't Ofcom say, look, okay, you can talk about only what's happening in Ruislip.
Yeah.
And then we would send John out and look at deprivated areas of those communities, because that's what I would be doing. Talking to those communities that are affected by political stuff, maybe even visit a mosque or two, John.
Oh yeah, I'd love to.
Or a synagogue, even.
Yeah, there's a synagogue.
Say, what's the truth about this anti-Semitism? And I'm nine times out of ten, I'm never. What? You know, or speaking to my friends who are Muslim, say, what do you think about this anti-Islamic thing? So, no, I have never even been to the mosque, mate, because that's the people I know.
I've often said this, I've said this to a few Muslim people I know, which is, it's funny, isn't it, that the wider construct on media outlets such as those governed by Ofcom is that there's no such thing as a casual Muslim. Yeah, you know, any other religion or any other belief system, you can kind of be you can be totally obedient, or you can be casually involved, or like a lot of people in this country, you can be a Christian when you're lying in a hospital bed and your stomach's on fire, or something like that. All of a sudden you find God, or when you want to get married or dunk one of your kids' head into a bowl. But with Muslim, it's kind of like, oh no, you must be, if you're part of that, you must be completely and totally into it, and absolutely every part of it.
It's not. If we went out there and just spoke to people in our local community, so Ofcom said it, Dave and John, I'm giving you a license in your news. You don't have to use our feed. You can talk about what's happening in your community, which we think would be beneficial. Yeah. Thank you very much, Ofcom. And I think, as a rule, we would go out and talk to people, you know, talk to people in, and we all have these parts in our community, a deprivated community where people don't work or are working in poverty, and then I would convince them, let's get our message out there. And one of the second things I would do is say to them, let's rock the vote, let's get the vote out there. I would they will never let us do that, John, ever.
No, just to coming back on that, then, a couple of technical things. Did you pick up any engineering skills doing this kind of thing? I mean, the type you wouldn't have picked up in school or something.
Sometimes. I mean, I wasn't. I mean, so we used two young guys from Halston. They were in part of rock bands and stuff like that. And then in a section of their house, we just let them get on with it, and it would cost us about £100. So we'd go to Henry's in Edgware Road, or they would, and they'd buy the most basic circuit board stuff. And it was basically, I'd say, I think we could have built it, but we were just so into the music. But it was basically a power supply, 6 or 7 capacitors, and then, you know, it was very, very, very basic. Very basic. It had to be FM because AM was just crazy. AM was better at night than day.
Yeah.
So at night time you had the troposphere, and that's the time when you could actually listen to Radio Luxembourg and things like that. But in the daytime you couldn't hear Radio Luxembourg because the troposphere had gone from there. You know, so we learned all this stuff. I'd learned about SWR. SWR is the reflection from the transmitter. So we'd check the SWR, so the lower it was, or higher it was on the meter, meant you were transmitting a lot from the aerial. And when we tested the transmitter, we had to put as a test aerial, we had to put not the aerial in the where they built the transmitter, we had to put it in a can of oil. And it would start bubbling when we tested the transmitter, because if we had the aerial in the room, we'd all get a headache. It was that powerful. So, wow. And then we did that literally. So every time we went to them to build a transmitter, it, we'd have to sit there. We'd get there about 9 in the evening, and then we'd leave there at 6 in the morning because it was ready. So they'd build it from scratch. And then we'd write little messages on the lid. Eric, hello Eric. Eric Gotts was the DTI guy who used to take us down. Sometimes we'd cement the transmitter under the road or something. Yeah, but I don't know why we did it. It's just crazy. I'm so pleased about technology now, you know. We don't have to do that, and we're not under the jurisdiction. But it'd be great if we look at what you're doing now, John. You're somewhere else. I can Skype you in, and then I go through 2 computers to put you on the stream. And our servers are in 2 parts of the world, which aren't under jurisdiction of the UK. I don't think that would have affected it. I just thought it was the right thing to do. I think I could have had the servers in London, but I just don't trust them, John. So I put them in 2 parts. Our servers are actually in 2 parts of the world, but not in the UK.
But that's very telling, because I think, and I wonder about this, it's a bit chicken and egg, where, you know, were these your values and you got involved in pirate radio, or did you get involved in pirate radio and these fed your values? Is the idea of us having this freedom, you know, to speak, and this is what I mean by creating culture and about it being political. I mean, funnily enough, my political awakening is not the same but similar, and that was when I was a teenager, was to do with censorship. And as we've talked about before in you know, when we did a program about hip hop and everything, was this music that I'd finally found that spoke to me, that actually gave me a sense of identity and a place to put my anger and my creativity. And it was being shut down because apparently it was terrible and inspiring violence, and people are using naughty words, and these loud black men were scaring the white suburbs, particularly scaring those who had daughters, and all this kind of stuff. And or what they'd be really doing, especially in the case of Public Enemy, was telling you stories you weren't supposed to hear. And I think that kind of got me sort of involved in politics, but in a way that is telling, like you say, you want to call for the, you don't want anything from the government. You don't want to feel like you owe them anything and they owe you anything. But at the same time, you're being realistic here, and you want the Home Secretary to, like you said, to stop pissing about and shutting you down for no good reason. But just quickly, just another question. Did you, and we'll come back in a minute, by the way, before we go for a music break, because we have slightly differing opinions on the need for pirate radio now. But did you think about tomorrow when you do? I mean, I said, did you think you were building culture? You were, but did you also think, I want this to be easier in the future? I want kids to do this in the kind of the way that you're doing it now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because I was from a community that, so I've got to be honest, some of my friends are dead. Some of them were or have been incarcerated, and some of them went on to do, you know, normal lives. I just felt at 16, 17, 18, we could have been a lot worse, and it annoyed me. You know, when you're sitting in this police cell waiting for the DTI to come and interview you, so the police would have to put us in the cell all night until the DTI came. Very nice, the police, you know. One actually said, I listen to you guys all the time, you know. But I just, there was a resentment in me. It's probably why I became a rep as well. There was a resentment in me because I was thinking I could be doing something so wrong, so bad. And it just stayed with me. And I've always, I just believe that the system has to control you. And just bear in mind about soul, funk and hip hop being played at the time. There was a difference between what I was doing and what I was trying to achieve and what a lot of other stations were trying to achieve. So one station started with us, and then they went very corporate. They went legal in the early 90s. I think they had a countdown, and it was a big thing. They went legal, and everyone was going on about it, and they had a countdown. And one DJ actually said, we didn't count down to go legal. We counted down for the death of that station.
Yeah,
because it went corporate. The suits, it just killed everything. Yeah. and it just totally changed, and it became a conglomerate, and it lost all its identity. And it's weird because some of the other DJs on other stations who were playing soul, funk and hip-hop, one of their aspirations was to go onto a legal station, to be, oh, I want to go on a legal station, Capital and Radio 1. That was never my ambition, ever. Ever. I have been on Radio 1 and Radio, BBC Radio East, because of the Bungra thing and all that, and we were doing a lot of the Bungra stuff and the hip-hop stuff and the Technics and that. I was guests on there, but only as an interviewee. So yeah. We was on BBC Radio 1 and BBC Radio East many times, but it just didn't interest me that was my aspiration.
Mm. I think that, I mean, there's so many things I want to talk about here. We should probably have a music break, and then we'll talk about it afterwards, and maybe even split this in half. But one thing I would say is that something that used to bug me is when the music that I talking about the music that I liked, when it became mainstream, and there is so much we can say about the mainstreaming of rap and hip hop culture and music, and how it, in my opinion, killed it. But you know, when you got those records, some of those records were played on Capital FM, and not. I'm not talking so much about Westwood's show, because that was a bit of a different thing, although he still had to clip the language. But you know, they would do a version of Ice Cube's "Today Was a Good Day," and they'd take out all the naughty language. I hated that. I didn't want these songs to chart. I didn't want them to have anything to do with the rest of you, the rest of society. It's nothing to do with you. You know, if you and your mates saw, you were out and about and you saw someone else wearing an Ice-T t-shirt like Lewis, it's kind of like you gave them a nod or a scratch of the nose to kind of show you were in your own kind of little thing. And we didn't want anything to do with the mainstream. We didn't want anyone to listen to our music. It's nothing to do with the straight people. We didn't like the normies. Do you know what I mean?
Interesting point. It is an interesting point. When we come back, we'll be talking more about Pirate Radio. But I'm going to play this one from 1985 because it was one of the tracks we always used to do the test for some reason, and we always pick this one.
John Bouts, John Bouts, all the on Tracks FM, Tracks FM, Tracks FM.
To play, and then we'd have to stop in the phone box and tell the guy in the studio to put the record back on because it would finish, and then we'd say, why don't you just play Rapper's Delight, because we had the 15 minute version. So yeah, it was great days. John Bowers, All the Rage. We're talking about pirate radio and everything else associated with that in the mid 80s. John?
Yeah, I was just going to say, so before we go on, we were saying that we figured this is, we're going to split this into a two-parter now, because it's taken a while. Also, I've got to say, I love this, is the fact that a few hours ago, our show had fell apart because we were supposed to do an interview with someone this week, and it hasn't worked out. So I was texting Dave back and forth, going, oh, what are we going to, I don't know, have I got enough, I've been working on that show all day, I don't think I've got enough for another show. He's like, well, let me, you know, we can always do a replay, let me know. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay. And then I did this, and I was writing that bit that I said at the beginning about British democracy. And then I thought, actually, we've been promising to talk about pirate radio for a while. You know, what do you think? I text David, what do you think? I said, yeah, okay. And here we are. And I haven't enjoyed a show as much as this for ages.
So, because yeah, we totally were, I think that, because what we were going to, I think one of the ones we were going to do, and we will do it, John, is 80s hip hop, because I'll get a list of songs, and that could be a show for 2 hours and split it into two, because there's so much good music, and there was a lot of social messages in a lot of those songs. Certainly, and we had, sorry to digress, but we had two parts of hip hop. We had the happy hip hop, we had the social justice hip hop from the East Coast, and we had the social justice hip hop from the West Coast. It's interesting, the West Coast went the most, it's a horrible place to live, that what it was describing, the West Coast. But that music went on to be, well, Dr. Dre is a multi-billionaire now. So it's interesting. Although I don't begrudge him of that, and I don't know anyone who does begrudge him of that. But sorry, I digress. John?
You mentioned billionaires again. Because I was thinking about that. It, just some personal experiences here. And for me, pirate radio, and this is one of the reasons why I still think it's important, because I know you said earlier about sort of Radio 1 Extra and grime and trap and all that stuff, but you know what? Where does that come from? I mean, that all came from pirate radio. So I think, and if if pirate radio is entering a new era now, even pirate YouTube stations or something like that, which is not the same, but, you know, fine, or SoundCloud or any of that kind of stuff. But I still think it's necessary to kind of reach out to people. So, and to give you an example, when I was a kid, what I loved about this stuff was pirate. I was always kind of into doing the cool things that teenagers were doing before I was one, and had a ridiculous sense of myself. And I've got this vaguest memory. I think we were on a family holiday in Cornwall, and some of my brother's friends, and he's 5 years older than me, they'd come with us. And someone had a tape from the then pirate Kiss FM or something, and I came out of the shower one morning or whatever, and they were playing this. And they were going, oh yeah, this is Kiss, this is, you know, which I'd heard of. And it was so exciting. You know, you imagine that when your contemporaries are, you know, it's music is about Top of the Pops, which I've always thought was a shit program, and whatever's charting at the moment, and you're watching Timmy Mallet on the all due respect to Timmy Mallet, he's amazing, but you're watching that on the telly, but then in the background here's this music. And again, you know, the point is, a lot of that kind of music I wouldn't listen to now, but that kind of dance, rave, hardcore, like whatever you want, you know, this is probably, if we think about it, probably the last truly unique musical genre. And you'll probably, maybe you find this too with like with the stuff you were doing, Dave, like kind of soul funk and certainly electro, is it was the first stuff that genuinely didn't sound like anything else.
No, and we'd have to go to certain record shops, and but it's funny, we talk about organizing, and people think, oh, that snowflake's going about organizing and these weird people and marching in the streets and shouting. I think that's the difference. Whatever party you vote for at that time, if you were into soul funk and if you were from Ireland, Scotland, Wales, when it came to pirate radio and that music, we organised. We got certain records out there and we pushed it for no money whatsoever. We organised. And we became a community. So even now, from that era, John, there are many reunions of soul funk, and from people from parts of the country come together to hear music from the early 80s, and they're 50, 60 now. And they've got together minimally advertising, very little advertising, just word of mouth and social media.
All the Rage with John Bowd. www.traxfm.org.